So I'll say a few words about myself and then go into the things I want to share with you and have us focus on for tonight. I have been involved with the NBC work for about 12 years or so, and I've been focusing on NVC mediation for about 8 years now, and it has become the thing that I most enjoy focusing on. Exciting and interesting and fun for me to offer to others. And I do it both in training contexts. My very close friend and colleague Ike Lassiter and I do year-long programs. This training will be to take some of the core skill pieces and modules from the first retreat of our year program to give you some of that. So I do training, and then I also do a fair amount of mediation myself, working with people and helping facilitate conversations between people who are in conflict. And my hope in offering to you all things I have in mind for you or goals that I would have, one is that some of you may also want to be able to mediate between other people as a mediator, to play a mediator role, or in your workplace of somewhere in your professional life, you might want to be able to facilitate conversations between people who are in conflict. So there's that. And then also to mediate your life, we sometimes call it, to be able to have these skills to mediate your own conflicts and challenging interactions with people. And thirdly, actually, to mediate the voices inside of yourself. The times when we get in conflict within, and to have skills to mediate those inner conflicts. So I'm hoping to contribute to all three of those aspects of dealing with conflict. And I'm very happy, excited that you are signed up for this, and really looking forward to sharing what Ike Lassiter and I have been coming up with in our years of evolving training process around this. So I want to say a few overviews, and I'm going to try not to say too much before we get into some more practice-oriented things. But first I want to say what NVC mediation means for me. And it's basically, if I said it in a real, the essence, it's that the focus is on connection happening, and then the solutions arising out of that connection, emerging. I think of like organically emerging out of connection. Once there's a sense of a kind of connection, I define connection, I think of connection as where we feel and experience our sameness with each other, like that we're part of the same human family. At a certain level, we're not separate, I believe, that we're part of the same energy, part of the same life. There's one life coming through in all these myriad of forms, but there's this one underlying life. And it's somehow when connection happens that we're sort of in touch with that in some way. Maybe a lot of people wouldn't think of it that way, but that's how I try to define it, what does connection mean? Of course, there's individuality and uniqueness and honoring that, and then there's a sort of way that we can experience a lack of separation in a healthy way. And so for me, that's sort of the point. And I think of that as a very natural place to be. And from what I know of brain science, which I've been learning a lot about from Stephanie Matei and I, the Stephanie that's facilitating this call, she and I also do NVC conflict resolution work related to working with people that work with children. And Stephanie brings a very strong brain science background to that. And I've learned a lot from Stephanie. So what I understand of the research is that we're hardwired to be related, to be able to work together and be, you know, sort of friendly with each other and care about each other and enjoy giving and receiving to each other, and that's the place where we are when we're not triggered into any kind of fight, flight, or freeze response. And that reaction, that response is very deep. It goes back, all the way to the beginning of life, of eons ago when life was just starting on this planet, I think, you know, in terms of if you believe in evolution, that and we're part of that, and that's such a deep biological thing that happens in us. Parts of our brain get activated that have to do with self-protection and survival and responding to threat. And it wasn't that long ago compared to the history of the 4 billion years of the Earth being around that, you know, we were living in caves and running away from saber-toothed tigers and things like that, that gets triggered in us, and our whole body changes, our chemistry, the way we think, the way we process information, our whole body changes chemically and the neural pathways that are happening, and it's this protective, self-protective mode of fight, flight, or freeze. And when we're in that state, it's much more likely we're going to be thinking in a way that is about who's right and wrong, who's good and bad, and blaming the bad people and fighting against them or running away from them or disconnecting. Of course we disconnect. We disconnect because that's what will keep us safe generally. In our genetic history, you don't want to connect with a saber-toothed tiger, you know. However, I do find that if we can come back to presence and back to connection within ourselves, back from a fight-flight reactivity, we're much more effective, even in a dangerous situation, that we can act in a more effective way. Now, of course, if we have no time, we just need to react on instinct. But generally, that's not the case in our modern world. And so for me, it's just this crucial skill of being able to return back to presence and connection when we get triggered into this fight-flight reaction. So that's in terms of conflict, that's what I see. That's how I like framing what's going on now. And a big part of that is how we think when we're in that kind of state. We think in a way that's about creating disconnection, really. But it's trying to meet our needs. So that's how I talk about it now. And so I see NBC mediation as about first focusing on re-establishing connection, and then out of that, the solutions arising. And I see kind of in the history of conflict resolution, I think it probably tends to be that the idea was you first try to come up with the strategies that will create peace. So you come up with the good solutions, and that will create peace and connection. And this is kind of the reverse, where you focus first on understanding and connection. And at this certain quality of connection, where we experience a kind of oneness of our humanity, and then out of that, this collaboration and new possibilities. So that's how I define NBC mediation. In terms of this, the body of work that Ike Lasser and I have created around NBC mediation. First of all, I want to give credit to Marshall Rosenberg, the founder of NBC. We learned the basic mediation model from him, how he talked about and demonstrated doing mediation. And then we, for the last 8 years, trying to figure out how do we create a learning context, people to actually learn these skills in more and more powerful and effective way. And at this point, we've come up with this, what I think of as an integral framework for how human beings function, well, related to how human beings function, and the maps of ways to put together the language of NBC and the skills into a kind of map for navigating different kinds of conflict. So I talked about conflict within, conflict where we're in with other people, and also conflict when we're supporting other people formally or informally, we're helping other people who are in conflict. So there's different maps depending on which of those areas of conflict, different ways of organizing the skills. And then there's also maps that go with before conflict, during conflict, and after, pre-mediation, mediation, and post-mediation. So there's a grid actually of 9 quadrants and different maps, I like calling them, for each of those. And we'll just focus on a few of those. The main one for this series is going to be the formal-informal map, when we're mediating conflict between others, and the steps and the skills that go with that. And what I found, though, is in practicing whether or not you want to mediate for other people, that just sitting in the mediator role, in this case a virtual chair, but sitting in that role and mediating and facilitating tends to create a certain kind of greater comfort and ease being with conflict and with intensity. And also rotating through the different roles, you'll see as we go along that you play the role of mediator, but you also play the role of the different disputants in a conflict, and playing each of those different roles and also an observer role sometimes, that you start to learn these skills in a deep way that then can carry over into how you do interpersonal mediation when you're part of it or with yourself. That's the idea. Now, that may not have been too much for you to follow. I'll, just set out like that, but I will kind of keep referring to that over the course of our time together. So if it didn't all make sense to you yet, then hopefully it will as we go along. Another thing I like to talk about, upgrading the human operating system, that as human beings, what's the operating system for a human being in relating to conflict, mediating conflict, and that in terms of upgrading, like just the analogy of a computer system, upgrading the operating system is like, I see it as putting our real situations into the role play. So some mediation trainings, you use these sort of made-up scenarios that, created ahead of time and written out in detail, and it's all made up. What I really believe more and more in is the real power, one of the real powerful things of this kind of training is to put your own life, we say put your life into the chairs. And by doing that, you get to play yourself and have someone else play the role of the person you're in conflict with and someone mediating that. And then you can play the role of the other person you're in conflict with. And then you can play the mediator and mediate your own conflict. And I think that just really creates this sense of growth, developmental growth in ourselves and our capacity to deal with challenge and conflict and intensity. And so that's my hope for you all. What I want to offer is that kind of developmental growth and capacity change, and not just learning some new skills, adding on some new skills to what you normally do, but actually offer the possibility of a kind of developmental change. And finally, I want to talk this metaphor of a flight simulator, analogy of being in a flight simulator. So sometimes people will talk, we're just doing these role plays and it's not really real life and, it's not real enough. And I want to just say, no, it's supposed to not be real. The analogy of a flight simulator, that you don't need to crash and burn, when you're learning how to fly airplanes and jets. You can gradually increase the level of difficulty and challenge in a very safe way, this container that really holds you in a safe way, and you can dial the difficulty and challenge level to set it at your learning edge, which we call within your learning zone. And so I like seeing this, that it's a self-directed learning process. And I'll be giving lots of ways to suggest ways to practice these skills. But ultimately, it's you sitting in the flight simulator of these three-chair, we call it triad role plays, mediation role plays, and seeing what works, what produces connection, what doesn't produce connection, and getting feedback. So I see a key element to learning. One is to practice a lot. So I'm hoping that we'll do lots of practice. Sometimes it's easy to get to lots of talking, but I'm going to try to give you a chance to practice a lot during and in between our classes, and then to learn how to give really high-quality feedback to each other so that you're getting that learning from each other and trying out different things and seeing how it affects other people and seeing how when the mediator does things, how you're affected by that. And then giving feedback. So it's learning from these different perspectives that I find very, very powerful. So again, this idea of the flight simulator being, it's not, in my view, I don't want it to be real for you. I want it, and even for me, I still do practices with people and my dyad and triad partners that I practice with. And I want to be able to stop. Wait a minute, no, let's stop. I want to do that over again. Oh, hold on. I want to actually have you do this instead because I want to work on this. It's a simulator, so you can create and craft and make this learning situation the way you want it to learn what you want to learn. And I think it's just this amazing opportunity. And real life will happen, and you'll get plenty of real life. Don't worry about that. But this is this idea of having a simulator that you can ramp up the difficulty and play with it. I think it's just incredibly useful. So I hope you find that. And okay, how about any questions or comments? I just said a lot of stuff, and I don't expect you to remember all that, but I wanted to give you a little bit of a taste of the overview there. Any questions or comments about what I just said before we go into some practice? Okay, I'm not seeing anything. I'm just going to carry on. In terms of the handouts that you have, I put a 2-page handout that's about the mediation training overview that has the 5-step model, the 9 skills. So that's in terms of the what we'll be working on mostly for this series will be that 5-step mediation model and the 9 skills. One of the last classes will be on the enemy image process, which is like a more of a one-on-one process that can be used for pre-mediation and conflict coaching and working with ourselves. For the most part, though, we'll be working on the mediation model, and that handout is in there. And on the back, the second page of that, there's a lot of detail on how to set up a triad role play, how to dial the difficulty, and giving feedback. And I'm not going to go into could talk a little bit more about the feedback, giving feedback, because it's so crucial, I find, to the learning. But I don't want to overwhelm you with too many words right now. I think I'll focus more on that next time. But just to let you know, it's there. You can look at it. I invite you to read through it. It's kind of outline form, but a lot of information there. There's also a handout on feelings and needs. The way I've organized it on the handout I gave you, I particularly like because it organizes it in a way that makes the needs kind of simpler for me to remember and connect with when I'm not sure what the needs might be. Organized into 3 meta categories of needs: well-being, connection, and expression, and then different core needs related to each of those. So if that's helpful to you to help develop your language of feelings and language of needs, if that is helpful and supportive to you, I recommend it. I still like looking at needs and feelings lists just to keep refreshing my vocabulary. And in the practices, if it's useful for you to look at that to help you find words. And then there's a handout about the outline for the class, the different topics and different classes. So the first skill of the mediation model, again, that we got from Marshall, the way we've organized these skills is just the way we've come up with that. So don't want to blame Marshall if it doesn't work for you, the skills. But the first one, empathy, is a key, probably, I'd say it's the most important skill. They're all important, but it's the one we start with. And empathy, I like talking about empathy in terms of 4 different elements of empathy. I find it particularly in mediation, mediating with people and empathically connecting to them and reflecting back what we're hearing, that breaking it down into these 4 elements has I found very useful, especially with people that aren't familiar with NVC or might balk at the language of NVC. You may have experienced that in your life where if you try to say, are you feeling something because of your need for that, you know, then people just look at you like you're kind of crazy. Or, you know, they say, oh, thanks a lot, and they kind of move away. So there's a way to kind of practice empathy that I find makes it easier to do and easier to receive on the other end. So those 4 elements are in the handouts. Oh, I also put a handout in there that goes in more from it's an excerpt from our training manual that goes through each of the skills and in some depth there. So the empathy, the 4 elements. The first element is presence, and I define presence as not thinking. And that thoughts may be sort of flitting through, but it's this awareness, our ability to be aware and rest our attention on the speaker. So in terms of empathy, someone speaking to us, that presence, I define it as emptying my mind of thoughts, letting go of thinking about what the person is saying, and just being there with an open heart and an open mind, empty mind, clear mind, literally meaning that there are not so many thoughts going on. I'm not trying to think about or even understand what the person is saying. I'm being with them with my attention. And I'm not saying that's all of empathy, but that's, for me, that's a really important part of empathy, is that quality of presence. So I'll go through all four, and then let me know if you have questions about any of them. And I'll also demonstrate some of that with you as well. So presence is the first element. And again, this is how I have found it useful to talk about empathy. So presence, and then silent empathy. So it's still in terms of silence. There's a presence that just is being silently with the person. And then silent empathy being, so I'm thinking, but I'm thinking about what are the feelings that are going on in this person as they're talking. I wonder how they're feeling right now as they're talking. I wonder what needs are in what this person are saying, what's alive in this person, what the needs in about what they're saying. So just silently, without, there are many times when it can be much more helpful, I find, to not speak the empathy out loud, that people are wanting a kind of spaciousness and eye contact, or just the presence on the phone even, you can feel it. And just our silently guessing feelings and needs can be very helpful and more powerful than words sometimes. But that I find different than just the first presence. Presence being, well, not even thinking at all. I'm just there as a open, my pure awareness. Okay, so presence. Silent empathy. Third one, understanding. And this one doesn't get talked about a lot, but I see Marshall doing it a lot when he empathizes. And for me, it's about my goal when I'm reflecting back understanding. That would be sort of the more traditional, like active listening and, you know, reflecting back the gist of what we're hearing someone say. And I think that's a really often an important step. Not always, but often, I find. To if someone says something like, God, that guy, that person, you know, she was just so rude and inappropriate and, you know, I couldn't believe she said that to me. So me reflecting back understanding might be, oh, so it sounds like, is it that she said some things that really kind of pushed a button for you? It really sort of, you feel really angry. And You really don't like how she's being, and you'd like her to be different. So I didn't try to put it into need language yet. I just tried to connect with what she's saying. So I'll do some more examples of that. Understanding. Just hearing people in the way they want to be heard, in the language that they're speaking. It doesn't have to be word for word, parroting back, but it's this idea of trying to capture the essence in a very natural language way. Without trying to do anything with it, just get it, and the person feels gotten. And the fourth element, the need language, what the language of NBC really is about, is to connect thoughts, to translate the judgments and thoughts into what are the needs behind those thoughts, the needs getting expressed through that thinking, like you're so selfish being the need for consideration, for example. Listening for the need behind the thoughts and feelings, connecting feelings to needs. So you're really angry because you want, because you, this kind of respect that you're wanting here. Yes, yes. So, and then deepening into the needs. Really kind of lingering and savoring and letting someone just really kind of focus. Yeah, I'm really hearing how much you want to feel a kind of care and respect and consideration for you. Yeah, yes, yes, yes. That's a kind of deepening into the need. Those are the four elements that I have found useful to make distinctions around. But then in actual empathy, that they all kind of flow together. But I actually sort of track them all separately in my mind. But in real time, empathizing with people, that they can be happening in any kind of order. It's not a linear order for that, necessarily. Okay, so lots of words again, and I will demonstrate it next, but any questions so far or I demonstrate. Okay, good. Sounds like I was clear enough to can hold off till you see demonstrations. So I'm going to just demonstrate a little bit with someone. If you want, I can work with one of the people assisting, or I can work with one of you. So I'll give one of you a chance. If you want to just talk about something that's kind of important to you right now, a situation that's kind of challenging for you, anything that you might want to speak about, that would be one option. Another is just talking about why you signed up for this class. Could be what you're excited about or what you're afraid about being in the class, but could be that. Something, just talking about anything, really, and I'll demonstrate, try to demonstrate those. So let me start with Annette. So obviously I can't really demonstrate for you presence and silent empathy because you can't know what's going on inside my head. But what I want to demonstrate is the difference between understanding and need language. So Annette, as you talk, I'm going to go back and forth doing both of those things. All right?
So I want to outline a scenario that's happening at work. I find myself starting to shut down, you know, I'm starting to lock into my position with a coworker.
Oh, actually, Annette, let me just stop you right there. I just thought of something I can do. So what I'm going to do for the first minute or so of Annette talking is to do presence, where I'm not even going to really think about what you're saying, Annette. I'm going to just put my full attention on, like, listening to the tone of your voice and just being with you without really trying to think too much about it, yeah? So others of you that are listening, try to do the same thing. See if you can be with her voice and what she, in a way that you're just, like, just listening to the tone and the spaces between the words. Let go of your thinking, if you can, and just be with Annette in what she's saying. Okay? So go ahead, Annette.
Okay. So just to paint the scenario, I have a coworker who over the last few months has really started shutting down around me. No eye contact, no greetings. And we tend to work need to work closely together at different points. And today, as an example, one of these points showed up, and I need her to step up to do some work. And I made a choice to go around, like to go to her manager to try and to present the scenario and to put the priority on it, since she is kind of stepping away from contact.
Can I stop you there for a moment?
Sure, sure.
Okay, thank you for it so far. All right, everyone. So maybe you were able to do what I was asking around presence. So now, Annette, as you're talking, I'm going to do silent empathy. As you're talking, I'm going to just wonder about how you're feeling, what your needs are in what you're saying. But I'm still not going to say anything quite yet, okay? Just for a little bit longer, and then I'll start reflecting back some of what I hear you say.
Okay.
So carry on about your work situation.
Okay. Honestly, I'm starting to feel like I rocked the boat and I was ready to have some of those preventative political conversations with various managers just to start sharing what my tactic is. And as I was thinking that, I started second-guessing my motives and maybe thinking I should have dealt with it directly instead of trying to do a roundabout. So I feel a little bit caught in the middle on how to solve this when other people do recognize there's some kind of issue going on here, some kind of victim thing going on by the other party, and I've been already told like a few months ago to just stay out of it. But that doesn't discount the fact I still have to try and get work done.
Okay. Let me see if I'm understanding you so far, Annette.
Sure.
So this is a colleague that you work with, someone that you, it's like in your department, somebody you interact with?
Correct.
Okay. And this person is behaving in a way that's really not working for you. And you have tried to get some support with your supervisor, but you're not kind of getting, still a problem for you, what's happening with this person. Is that?
Yeah, to a degree, yes. My supervisor is the one coaching me to just let it ride and not to get too involved in kind of solving it, because there's an understanding that there's a different solve, which I'm not in the circle of. Does that make sense?
Let me see. So your supervisor's coaching you, trying to help you deal with this person. Yeah, but the way your supervisor's offering for you to handle it still isn't, it still really isn't helping you the way you'd like. There's still stuff, things going on with this person that make it really difficult for you to get your work done, to do the work you want to do? Or is it something else?
Probably true when there's a kind of a flare-up like there is today. When there's nothing going on, it's just, you know, two people not giving each other eye contact, right? And then when there's a need to interact or need to resolve something, then, you know, then I call in the managers.
So it sounds like, is it two things? Like, this discomfort when you feel around being at work and anytime this person's around and just wanting there to be more of a kind of being able to be relaxed in at work and around this person. Is that part, that's part of it?
Yeah, that would be part of it. I've known him for many years, so.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, the buzz is that, you know, there's some kind of victimhood here, and, you know, I'm not clear on what she's reacting to.
I see. That. So she sees you, maybe, from what you understand, she might see you as doing something that's harmful to her, or that the victim, like that she's the victim, is that what you
correct.
Mean? Yeah.
So you're right. I do feel uncomfortable because I don't, you know, no one wants other people to feel that way around them.
Yes. So uncomfortable and wanting there to be kind of more harmony and being relaxed at work.
Correct.
Is there also part of it, like a little bit of pain in you about wanting to be seen? Think about being seen or being known or understood for where you're really coming from.
That's true. That's fair. Pang of emotion in my eyes as you said that.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Yeah, it's a hurtful situation, honestly.
Yeah, so some hurt in you, and is that a good way to say it, about like wanting to be understood, wanting to be seen for what's really true about you?
Probably at a very deep level, yes. That's true. I don't know that one gets the opportunity that often at work to present, you know, the real you, you know, or to resolve these sort of scenarios.
Okay. So maybe at not as deep a level. It's something that, like, just wanting there to be a kind of peacefulness and collaboration, being able to work well together with the people you work with. Is that?
That's a great way to put it.
Yeah? Okay. Yeah. So that's, like, just kind of, is it some sadness and frustration about really wanting to be able to work well with the people that you're at work with. Let's sort of stop the exercise for the moment. And how about a little feedback for me, or maybe even before that, just how was the process of you talking about this right now and me reflecting back some things, just how do you feel right now and how, you know, kind of overall, how was it for you?
On the one hand, it feels a little exposing because we don't see each other's faces and body language.
Mm-hmm.
So it feels like, you know, I just met everyone and here I am sort of dumping a little bit like that.
Yeah.
But the interchange was comfortable and you actually drilled down pretty quickly to the essence of it. And even though it's exposing, quote unquote, it doesn't feel uncomfortable.
Uh-huh.
It didn't feel uncomfortable. I don't feel uncomfortable.
And now I'm going to ask some questions to meet my needs for feedback and to kind of get any learning I can out of our interactions. Annette, I had a sense, you said, oh, that was pretty deep. And then I kind of went up to another level that was more about the kind of, you know, working well together. Did that feel better to you kind of when I kind of went there and it didn't feel as vulnerable or as revealing? Is that more kind of where you were in the moment? Was it a bit closer to where you were?
I'd say yes. And maybe I overlay a little defeatist scenarios into my workspace. And even though I want the deep sort of feedback, it's not anything against what you were saying. It's maybe more I'm already solving that I can't actually resolve at that deep of a level. with the skill set I have today, right?
And in terms of being seen, being understood, that not sure how you could meet that. Is that what you
correct.
Mean?
Yes, yeah. That's what I mean.
Okay. Did you notice when I was kind of just using some of your, just sort of staying back what I was hearing you say and kind of getting the gist of what was going on for you, and then when I switched into your feelings and your needs, did you feel a shift there?
Not really.
Yeah?
I know you shifted, but I didn't, yeah, I wasn't that conscious of it because it just flowed so nicely.
Okay. So anything, any other feedback for me? I want to check with the others and see if they have any questions just about what we just did. But any other feedback about anything that was helpful? Here's the question that I liked. Things that I did that contributed to kind of more connection for you, kind of connection inside yourself or with the situation or with me, or that took away from that in any way that was helpful or not so helpful in you getting understanding for what was going on, be feeling heard in a way you wanted to be heard. No?
For me, everything was just right.
But okay,
I think you're asking others now, aren't you?
No, I was asking you to see if there's anything else before I ask the others. But it sounds like you're saying that nothing else stands out for you that didn't work for you. Or
I was probably caught up a little bit in the emotion of the scenario. In terms
sure.
of, to be honest.
Sure.
So, yeah, I was probably a little needy. So I was less of a student. I was just jumping right into
that. That's often what happens. It's a little harder to remember and track the other things if you're right in it and the one that's doing the work. So how about I'll ask any others. Raise your hand if you have a comment on what you saw me doing or a question, you know, about when I was doing what I was calling and consciously, you know, trying to demonstrate the understanding, what I did at first with Annette, the language that I was using, and then when I shifted into really trying to connect to her feelings and her needs. Jasmine.
I have a question about what you've been discussing in terms of when you went a little bit deeper than it sounded like she was ready to necessarily go in that moment. And
yes.
then you stepped back and took it to a slightly less deep level. The reason I'm asking is that I've had some issues with my father around, I think, maybe making empathy guesses that almost went into things that he wasn't conscious of himself. And his feeling, very understandably, looking back on it, you know, really vulnerable when I did that. And my question is, that looked like a really skillful way to do it. And I'm wondering if you have any other recommendations for when you can sense that you've really gone a bit beyond what the person is really prepared to be sharing in that moment.
Yeah, so what I try to do, my thought process, can I find some a need or some needs that I heard her talk about resolution, resolving. And then I said, are there any other needs that are maybe just even a little closer to what I just heard her say? And then I just sort of took, wanting to get resolved to wanting to be able to work well together. So that was kind of my inner thought process. I just imagine that would be less vulnerable feeling than kind of wanting to be seen in terms of our deeper self, our real self, you know, what's real for us. But another option is to go back to understanding, that I could have just gone back to just kind of reflecting back what she was saying and talking about her feelings, but not trying to go into the needs, just kind of back off from talking about the needs.
Okay. I'm also wondering if you would ever self-express around that, or if you would want to name that you're noticing that maybe it went a little too far.
I might ask, I might just say, did I kind of lose you there? Did I start wondering about something you weren't quite saying, and I want to really stay with you, kind of what you're telling me, And is that true, that it kind of felt like I wasn't with you so much? That's how I might say, you know, ask and just kind of check it out. But generally, I just sort of adjust it if I got a sense that, like what she said, that's pretty pretty deep. I think I would handle it in sort of one of the ways that we've said. Just kind of depends on the situation.
Great, that's helpful, because I think there's a way when you sense that you have dropped a little bit too deep into emotion with someone or into something that they may not be that conscious of, there's a way that, I guess there's a part of me that wants to self-express, but there's a way that it feels like actually what's being requested is to back off. So that, so those.
And I didn't get that sense from Annette. I just got a sense that it was sort of, it's sort of deeper than she was in that moment, but that she was, she was sort of okay with it, but it was almost a little startling to go there. But I did get a sense it wasn't like she was pushing it away exactly. But some people would, and then I would, want to respond in these ways that we're talking about.
Yeah, I also want to recognize that I wasn't seeing this in Annette, but I think that it pushed a button, just the little sense sort of coming back up a level or back a level pushed a button for me in terms of just something that I'm dealing with in my life right now. So
yeah, I think it's really important skill, part of empathy, to stay with, to not get too far ahead of the person. It starts to make people, I think, feel a little unsafe around us, or not like we've got some agenda. If we go too far, if we try to guess much, way beyond where they are, even if it's accurate. But there's something about staying closer with the person that I think is really important. So we'll talk about that quite a bit. It's very much about mediating conflict, and that, how do you meet somebody where they are and connect with where they are. So thank you, Jasmine, for your questions. I see Jane. Let's talk to Jane. And then I want to move, just to let you all know, what I want to do next is show you putting the empathy into the mediation chair, so setting up a scenario to mediate with, and then showing you that, and then giving you all a chance to try it out in the breakout groups. Okay? So first we're just looking at empathy by itself, and then putting it into the mediation context. Jane?
I was just going to comment that when you were talking, I didn't really notice you going from reflecting to needs, but what I did notice was a change in Annette in her responses, and I was thinking, whoa, wow, this is really touching a nerve.
Yeah.
And I could just tell by the tone of voice that you had really sort of hit the nail on the head, but I think you've already pretty much gone over that already.
Okay, great. Thank you, Jane. And so even if some of you didn't see the difference in what I did between what I'm calling understanding and then need language and deepening into the needs, I predict you will as we go through the rest of this class. And what I ask is you pay attention to that. See if you can notice the difference between what might be a kind of just reflecting back, a kind of a natural language, what someone is saying, and then when it's really going into the needs and connecting up with what the needs are. Okay. Let's do, this will probably be one of the few times in the whole course where I'm going to want to use a made-up situation. The rest of the time I want to work with real stuff if we can. But I want to work with a made-up one because it's a little easier to ease into the mediation process. So I want to use the situation of a couple fighting over a dog, getting a dog or not. Okay, so I'm going to do a little role play, a little demonstration with that. And then I'll ask you to use the same scenario to work with. So you don't have to take time to create a situation. You can just use that one. So are there two people who would be willing to be disputants for me? A couple be two people that are in a relationship, and you're going to be arguing over getting a dog or not, and I'm going to empathize with both of you. So it's just adding a layer of difficulty. Right, so here's, again, the most basic is just empathy when there's no conflict. And then doing empathy when there are two people in conflict is very different than empathizing with just one person, as you will probably see in the breakout groups. Okay, so Deborah and Jane, I see your hand up. Would be happy to get your help with this. So how about you be a couple, and which one of you would like to be the one that wants to get the dog? Deborah or Jane? Doesn't matter?
I don't want to get a dog.
Is that Deborah? Okay,
Deborah,
you do not want a dog. Okay, and Jane, you want to get a dog. Okay? And you can play this however you want. Just have fun, but be a little judgmental, and have a little bit of, barbs that you throw at each other, so that I can demonstrate some of the dealing with that. Okay? So really, like you're in a conflict about this, and you're upset with each other about this. And you can make up in your mind a whole scenario and then sort of speak from that. Okay. So, Deborah and Jane, I'm glad you are willing to let me see if I can help with your situation. And I'd like to see if I can help you both feel heard and understood the way you'd like. And before trying to come up with the solution, to just see if we can focus first on what you both want to be heard about right now. So who'd like to go first in terms of what you'd like the other person to hear right now?
Well, I'd like to hear why Jane wants to have a dog so bad, because she knows that I'm allergic to dog hair, and I'm miserable when I'm around a dog. And, you know, I love dogs. I just can't be around them without being allergic.
So you have an allergy to dogs, and you sort of kind of want some understanding about what Jane's thinking about this. Kind of, does she realize, is she remembering how you are, that you have this allergy? And
yeah, it's like she doesn't really care that I just, you know, sniffle and feel miserable. It's like I have a cold 24/7. And
so it kind of seems to you, the way it looks to you at the moment, is she's maybe not caring about it, and it's something really wanting there to be care, wanting there to be a care about how your comfort, your well-being.
Yeah.
Yeah?
Can I jump in? Do you want me to wait?
Actually, I want you to take turns. A more difficult role play is when you're jumping in and talking over each other and doing all that. But I'm going to dial down the difficulty so that for this demonstration purpose, and ask you to hold off. And let me just finish with Deborah here. So that was me stepping out of the role play for the coaching purposes, everybody. Now I'm stepping back into the role play with Deborah.
Okay, so first, it's the allergy, then a dog is a big hassle, the house starts smelling bad, the amount of time that we would have to spend, we can't travel with as much ease, you know, you have to get a dog sitter every time you go away.
So are you feeling pretty concerned about this, just kind of really worried about just even this talking about this, and really want to sense that there's some care about what works for you, your well-being.
Yeah, just the whole overwhelming hassle of the whole thing. I mean, we can play with the dog down the street. Our neighbors, you know, they let us play with their dog whenever they want to. You know,
okay.
Jane could volunteer at the dog shelter and walk dogs every day of the week. They always need people down there. I don't see why we have to have one in our house.
Okay. So you see some other possibilities to get the needs met, but you'd like something that would really really meet your needs here, would really work for you.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Well, I'd like to check in with Jane and see how she's feeling about this. And Jane, what you're wanting Deborah to hear right now, what's going on for you?
I just think Deborah just doesn't understand, because I've already, you know, I go play with the dog down the street, and I do go to the dog shelter and look at the dogs there and try and help out. But, you know, it's just not the same as having your own dog. You know, when you've got your own dog, that dog thinks you are just like the number one person in the whole world. And the neighbor's dog doesn't think that of me. I just really want an animal that is going to be like totally mine, that will really want to be with me. She just doesn't understand that. She just doesn't get it. And, you know, the allergies, you know, you can...
Let me see if I'm getting it. Let me see if I'm getting it so far. That you do some of these things, as being with other people's dogs or going other places, that there's something about your own dog that would just be really, you just imagine would be really wonderful for you. It's kind of a craving, it sounds like, that you're having to have this experience you imagine you would have if it was your own dog. Am I hearing you?
Well, yes, and actually, you know, I had a dog once who passed away, and it was just the most, one of the closest experiences I've had, and if I can never have that again, it's just going to tear me apart.
Uh-huh, so you had this experience once with your dog that was just really powerful closeness and bond that you experienced. Is that right?
Yeah, and
you like that again.
I so miss it. I just, there's nothing that can replace it.
So getting a dog for you would your imagining would really give you this sense of a depth of connection and relatedness, and a kind of there's a word you used that I lost, but there's a certain kind of closeness that
the dog like totally looks up to you and you know does you know if you spend enough time training the dog he obeys you and you don't have arguments like we do with people. You know, it's just such a nice, good feeling. And there's just a connection there that you just can't sometimes get with people.
So there's a certain kind of connection and closeness that you're imagining would be met with having a dog again that would be really precious to you, really wonderful.
Yeah.
So this somehow you're wanting to meet this need of this closeness and connection. That's a really important needs for you that you think would get met having the dog.
Mm-hmm.
And you're feeling kind of excited about that possibility.
I sure wish I could, yeah.
Like to be. But also when you hear Deborah's reactions that there's some, that's hard for you to hear too.
Yeah, I feel very resentful when I think that, you know, of the issues that she brings up are easily solvable. You know, the dog could be outside most of the time.
Before we go into the strategies of kind of how to deal with it, I'm just hearing that you imagine there could be ways to deal with having the dog that might meet her needs also, right? So it sounds like you'd like a kind of openness to ways that could work.
Sure.
Okay. So let's stop the role play there. And any feedback that the two of you have for me, things that I said or did that supported connection for you with yourself, with the other, with me, anything that supported that, anything that took away from that? Did you notice anything, feedback for me?
When you said that you would like some caring about how it would affect me, that connected with me.
Okay. All right.
When I talked about what a hassle it would be, something like you wanted Jane to understand what would work for me, I felt like I had a whole list of all of the things that would be a hassle, and I didn't really feel like you connected with how much
true.
I would just hate the idea of this dog.
Yes. So that resonates with my experience too. That for the purpose of the demonstration role play, I was choosing not to go kind of further with that. But that's helpful, just reinforcing that you did notice that. I didn't really connect to that part of what you were saying and that impact. You felt the impact of that, yeah?
I did, yeah.
Okay, thank you for the feedback. I appreciate that. Jane, anything from you? You noticed?
I thought it was very interesting how you got right almost immediately down to the issue of connection, you know, and that the whole issue of having a dog was of having a connection with another being, which actually, I think if we had gone deeper, we could have explored ways to get that connection, that sense of connection without having a dog too, you know.
Exactly.
Yeah.
That's part of what I was trying to do, to get to your need separate from the strategy of the dog. Just tease that apart so that there's more possibilities there. So that's one element, one aspect for me of getting down into the needs, of deepening into those needs, is to keep differentiating the needs from the strategies, needs from the specific things that are wanted to meet the needs. So that's a key thing in the empathy process. And in mediation, that's to get to these needs on both sides, where you strip away all the strategy, all the specificity that's usually where the conflict is. Okay. And again, for all of you watching, if you noticed or could see times when I was doing what I would call more of the understanding, just sort of saying back what the gist I was getting, and then when I was really focusing on the needs and connecting the feelings and the needs. Now I want to give you all a chance to practice a little bit in a breakout group. So Stephanie will break you into groups of three, and I would like you to mediate each for 5 minutes. And if, Stephanie, there's a way you can do each 5 minutes a bell to switch who's mediator. So in this case, if it was that I would rotate into one of the roles, I would say be the role of Deborah, and that Deborah could become the role of the person that wanted to have the dog. And Jane could then play the mediator. And then Jane mediates for a little while, 5 minutes, and then we switch again. And then I become the person who wanted to keep the dog. And Jane plays the role of the person that doesn't want the dog. So you get a sense of moving through each of the roles of mediator and the two disputants. Okay, and 5 minutes each. And just decide for the first one who's going to mediate first. And then you can just like rotate clockwise. Okay?
Okay, John, I do see there are a few hands up.
I had a question, John. That was that I noticed a couple of times you interrupted, and I was wondering if you were doing that because the limited amount of time that we have, or is that something you feel comfortable with doing?
Yeah. It's both. It's both. There, because I wanted to have as much time as possible for you all to go into a breakout group, I was interrupting a little bit, maybe quicker than I might normally. But at the same time, I do quite a bit of interrupting when I'm with people, you know, mediating in this way, just as a way to connect with them. I wanna be able to enter in and engage and connect, and sometimes if I wait too long, I can somehow losing that connection, and the other person might also be getting triggered by what's being said and whatnot. So there are a number of different occasions when I might want to interrupt someone in order to connect with them, not to take it away, just to connect with them. Yeah. So it was also what I would often do as well.
Thanks. That's helpful. Thank you.
And that's one of the 9 skills, interrupting. Let's actually program in a 5 minutes at the end to talk about giving feedback to each other. What was helpful, what wasn't so helpful. Try to be specific about what the mediator did. So we'll have a little bit of time at the end. But otherwise, just rotate through. Try to practice all 4 elements of empathy: presence, silent empathy, and understanding and need language.
Okay.
All right. Thank you.
All right.
You are now in a breakout. Please begin.
Annette.
Andrea.
And Deborah. I'll try being mediator. This is Deborah.
I'll be wanting the dog.
Is that Annette?
Yes.
Okay.
And okay, so I don't want a dog. Okay.
So, Annette and Andrea, I'm really glad that you were able to come and meet with me today to talk about this conflict that you're having. And Annette, would you be willing to start and say how you feel about getting a dog or not?
Sure. Thank you. Thanks for being here to help us today. So I have this love of dogs, and we had a dog, I guess, a few years back, and I think we're at a place where it would be a great opportunity to have a new dog. And I love the companionship they bring. I think it connects, you know, the family around the animal and sort of reminds us of responsibilities to other things and et cetera. So I'm like absolutely excited about having a dog, and you know, we just have had this conflict over whether to have one, and we haven't been able to resolve it.
So it sounds like you really loved having a dog before, and you'd love to have that opportunity to come again, kind of gather, be connected as a family somehow through the dog. Is that part of it? The dog somehow pulls you all together as a family. That was your experience.
Yeah, yes. And that wasn't my experience as a child growing up with my you know, original family, and I've experienced it in other scenarios as well, that it has always been a positive experience.
So you have a kind of a lot of rich memories around it.
Absolutely.
And you'd love to just have that joy again.
True. Yeah, and the opportunity to give to something, you know, something else. You know, I feel like I get wrapped up in my own thing all the time. You know, and our own like normal day-to-day things. So to be able to detach and, you know, have a mental break while, you know, seeing the joy that I can bring to the dog, you know, the animal, is also rich and fruitful.
Yeah. So there's something about really giving to another creature and having that responsibility where it's not, you're not just taking care of yourself, but you're really there for someone else, like the dog.
Exactly.
Well, thanks. Andrea, would you be willing to talk about how you see it?
Well, you know, Annette left out a few things, because when we had a dog before, I ended up taking care of the dog part of the time, and I had never signed on to that. So, you know, sometimes it was like, you know, it was late at night, and she didn't feel comfortable going out, and then it was I who had to take out the dog. And it was cold, it was rainy. I didn't want that dog to begin with. So I'm actually like, I just don't want the dog, and then I might be, you know, I probably have to take care of it too. And I just really don't want that.
Yeah, so part of what your frustration is really around, is it just wanting to be heard for your own choices, that you weren't part of that choice in the past. You really didn't want that dog before, but you had to care for it.
Right, right. I kind of like, you know, I get part of the process. I actually became part of my chores too. You know, it's just sort of like I just didn't really feel that was what I had signed on for.
So it really has to do with you're wanting some acknowledgement that was not your choice, and that you want to be able to choose this time around. Is that part of it, that you want to choose whether or not you're going to take on those responsibilities?
Well, yeah.
Please. That was quick. So this is Deborah. I'll decide I want the dog this time, since I didn't want the dog last time.
Okay.
So Deborah wants the dog right now, yeah. And Annette, what did you...
I can say no dog, and you can mediate if you're comfortable, if you're willing.
I'll give that a try.
Okay.
Okay. Okay. I'm glad that we can meet today, that we have a chance to meet today to talk about the situation about the dog. And I've heard, Deborah, that that you don't want dog, and Annette... No, you want the dog, Deborah, and Annette wants no dog, doesn't want a dog.
Right. The other way around, yeah.
Yes. And who would like to Deborah, you probably want to start.
Well, I really want a dog. I've wanted a dog my whole life. I had a dog when I was really little, and I haven't had a dog in my whole adult life, but I love dogs. They're so, I don't even have words for it. It's just like such a longing. Dogs are like the best creatures in the world. I mean, they are so, they're empathic, actually. When I was a little girl and I would cry, my dog would climb up on my lap and honestly lick my tears away.
You're
soul
really
connection.
Mm-hmm. So you're really yearning for a dog, and it seems like, you know, it really goes back to, you know, you wanted a dog for so long, and, you know, ever since you were a child, that was like such a positive experience, having a dog, and it kind of has stayed with you, those positive feelings. Is that right? And you'd like to have those again?
Yeah, yearning was really right. It's
okay.
Because there's just, you can have a connection with a dog unlike any other creature on earth. I mean, you can't have that. I've never had that kind of connection with a cat or a horse or a human being. It's like dogs really get you.
Yeah, it's kind of like they totally accept you and love you, and it's often reciprocal. Yeah.
You are the center of the world.
And now, did you feel complete that?
That's fine.
Okay. And Annette, you don't want a dog?
No, I've never wanted a dog. I mean, I love animals, but I want the freedom to come and go as I want. You know, I've seen other people get consumed by these pets, and they can't even really spend a half a day away from their house and their pet because they're so tied down by the responsibility and the love for these pets that they turn into like infant children, right? And you lose the opportunity to set healthy boundaries and to, you know, to explore other components of your life. Mm-hmm. So, you know, as much as I, you know, welcome the joy that they bring to me if I'm visiting a pet and, you know, all the everything that Deborah is saying about, you know, the love and the empathy and the intuitiveness of pets, I'm just really afraid of the burden and the weight of the responsibility and the pull on other areas of my life, our life.
Mm-hmm. So it sounds to me like you're worried about losing some of your freedom, some of your independence at this point, because you know, the dog would be so dependent.
Yes, that's fair. Yes, that's true.
Mm-hmm. And you just don't want to be tied down by a dog at this point.
Correct. You know, I don't mind being tied down by things to a degree, right? But not to the point of being, you know, 100%, 120, 100+% of my life, where, you know, all my movements are determined by situation with the dog.
So you're worried that the dog sort of will.
Please change partner.
Okay.
Yes. Well done. Andrea?
Oh, well, that was really difficult.
The time frame is very challenging, I find.
But even like sort of like, I guess I sort of like find really hard to, you know, come up with the responses. It's just...
Mm. It's true that, you know, understanding these needs and having a vocabulary to connect with people. So I guess I'm mediator now. It's Annette. And Andrea... do you want to stay with the no dog argument, or you want to go with the dog argument?
Doesn't he has matter. To want the dog.
Deb, do you want the dog again, or would
no?
You...
I don't want a dog this time.
Okay, then I want the dog. Okay.
Okay. Thank you, ladies, for letting me be with you today to help you resolve this situation. And if you're willing, I'd love for each of you to talk separately about the situation and just what's going on. And I'll be asking some questions just to help understand your feelings and the circumstance. And then from there, I'd like to take the conversation into resolving strategies to resolve this scenario.
Mm-hmm.
So if
well, good luck. I don't think you're going to be able to resolve it. We've been fighting over it for about 6 weeks now.
Well, I'm an optimist, so we'll start the journey together and see where we get to. So may I ask, Andrea, if you're willing to start with where you're at in this scenario?
Okay. You know, we live out in the country. And it's very lonely out here. I mean, like, you know, there are not many, you know, neighbors live a little bit further away. And I really would like a dog both for security reasons but also for company. Like, the kids are out of the house. And, you know, I'm spending a lot of time. When I come home from work, I'm just alone in the house because Deb is still at work. And a dog would really, like, make me... It would just make me feel so much more comfortable in my own home. Like, I mean, again, sort of the safety is a big issue for me. And then also sort of like, you know, just having that companionship. I just feel so lonely at times. And, you know, then Deb comes home and she says, well, you know, she's there. And that's true, but there are many times where I'm alone at home. And
coming home to that dark, quiet house sometimes, you know, does that make you feel uncomfortable?
It makes me feel uncomfortable, you know. It's sort of like both in terms of safety, but also just that there's, you know, the kids used to be home, and now there's nobody home, and it's just sort of like sometimes that coming into the house and there's nobody here. You know, it used to be full of life, and now it's not. the dog would really, really make a difference in my life. I mean, it just, you know, just someone to be there, someone to take care of. I love taking care of the kids. I would love taking care of a dog now. And this step doesn't get that.
Needed and about giving. Is it appropriate that you really enjoy the feeling of giving to others and nurturing others?
And I'm used to more life in the house. You know, like sort of like when the kids were there, it's always something happening. And, you know, we used to have dogs when the kids were at home, too. You know, now there's nothing anymore. And that just feels really lonely at times. I really would love a dog.
Thank you for that. Can I ask Deborah? So what is your argument for not having the dog? How are you feeling, or what's your thought?
You know, it's so interesting to hear you, Andrea, because how are we going to ever go visit the kids if we have a dog? I mean, what are we going to do with the dog? I want to be able to go, you know, to Portland and San Francisco and Minneapolis and see all of our kids. You know, they're all spread out. If we're going to go see one, it's going to take at least a week each time. And
am I hearing a need for freedom? You know, just a little bit of flexibility in your life.
Well, yeah, and also around that. You know, I'm trying to connect with Andrea's loneliness. I mean, our kids are like the most important people in our lives, and we hardly ever get to see them. And if we, you know, we don't have a lot of money, but that's really our biggest priority, is to go see the kids. And I just don't see how we can do it if we, what are we going to put the dog in a kennel for a whole week?
Time to shift to feedback. Thank you.
Yeah, I think we're back to the group now. That was difficult. I mean, you guys had such good, concise arguments, and I'm trying to find it. Okay, let me in here. Let me figure out what your need is.
Right.
Oh, boy.
We were a little tougher the last time, I think, Annette.
Yeah, you were letting me, yeah, you sent me a wild card. You started having a dialogue with Andrea. No problem. That's cool. What's happening now? So do you want to do a quick feedback if we have time?
Like, yeah.
Can I ask you, Andrea, did you feel like I connected with your feelings, or did I kind of fluff over it?
That's Annette right now, right?
Right.
Probably not at the level where I would have needed, like, I'm not sure that I sort of felt understood in the degree of loneliness that I experienced.
Yeah.
You know? And, yeah, loneliness, desperation.
Okay. Thank you for that.
Yeah.
Yeah. And Deborah, was I helping at all, or?
Yeah, you heard my desire for freedom. And I appreciated that, although I think I picked up on Andrea's loneliness partly because I didn't feel that she was heard on that part, you know, when I said, well, if she's so lonely, let's go see the kids. I heard her loneliness so strong, it actually gave me pangs about being so against the dog. I was giving in, even without your help.
So is it true that, you know, when someone acknowledge, you have to acknowledge the feeling, like, you know, it's interesting, I in my head I was hearing it, but I didn't express it.
Yeah.
So
and I thought that was like, I think it's really hard to sort of like be, to really like know like what to focus on, right? What to pick out. Because people are saying so much.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's so much information coming out, and then how do you, you know, pick out that most important thing? Or that seems like a struggle for me.
I'm still enjoying our dialogue. So
where are we in giving feedback?
Do you want to ask feedback, either Deborah? I feel good. Thank you for that. I want you guys to have a chance to hear feedback.
Yeah, if you can remember back to the first one, when it was Annette and Andrea fighting over it, did you feel that I connected with each of you?
I didn't feel that you didn't understand because I didn't make a note of anything. I didn't feel... Yeah, because for me it was about freedom.
Yeah. Andrea, yeah. Did I...
I felt that was really well done, yeah. I mean, I felt understood at that point. And then we ran out of time, I think, again, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, I was really trying to connect with your need for choice.
All right, everyone. I hope you had a fun time with that. I enjoyed going and listening to you all. I was enjoying how you were empathizing. And we're getting pretty close to the end of the class. My request is that you practice what we did today. Just practice just giving empathy to one person and the other person. You know, have a mediator and two disputants. And you can come up with some other kind of scenario if you want. Or you could just use this one some more and keep playing with it. But to just, you know, practice being the mediator, taking turns being the mediator, empathizing with person A and person B. Okay, I'll hear from a few other people. If anybody else needs to go, since we're a little past the hour, thank you for being in the class, and we'll see you next time. And in the next class, I'll be introducing the rest of the steps of the model. So it's more than just empathizing with both people. There's some other steps in there and other skills to be learning over the course of the time. But for this, I would suggest just practicing what we did today, just to keep it simple, and just work on the different elements of empathy as you empathize with two people at the same time.
Yeah.
And just start there, and believe me, it'll get more challenging quickly as we get more steps and skills. Okay, who else had your hand up? Catherine?
Yeah, I just wanted to offer a suggestion, and that is when you switch pairs, you can move on content-wise. Each new mediator doesn't have to start over as if they're starting the conversation. Each person can, even though they're in a different role now, pick it up where the last person in that role left it off in the conversation. So you don't do anything other than just the empathy, the way you demonstrated it, John, but you can have certain several rounds of it on different levels of depth, I would imagine.
Yep. Thank you for that. Thank you all again, and I look forward to talking to you next time. Bye, everyone.